Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly conversation on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Billy Easton, Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education, a coalition mobilizing communities across the state to keep New York true to its promise of ensuring a high-quality public education to all students, regardless of zip code. Welcome, Billy Easton.
It's good to be here, Alan.
Well, Billy, you are sort of a champion for fully funding education in New York State. I would ask you this, how are we doing?
Not very well. In fact, very poorly. You know, in 2007, the state made a commitment to fully and fairly fund our schools. That was a result of a lawsuit called the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. For 2 years, they made progress. They started to do it. We saw a lot of improvements in schools, especially high-need schools. And then they took all the money back in 2010 and 2011.
And when you say they, who do you mean they?
Well, in 2010, it was Governor Patterson. In 2011, it was under Governor Cuomo. They cut $2.7 billion from our schools with the support of the legislature. And
why'd they do that?
Well, you know, it was about priorities, okay? And remember, the economy had collapsed in 2009. They froze funding. But by 2011, the economy was on the way back, but Governor Cuomo wanted to cut taxes on millionaires and billionaires. So he cut taxes on millionaires and billionaires and slashed funding for our schools, and the students are the ones who paid the price.
And so schools all over the state have been recovering ever since.
They've been trying to recover ever since, and the state's been making school aid increases since then, but they haven't been able to get back to where they were before in terms of the programs in the schools, the opportunities available for students. Class sizes have gone up. Lots of programs have been cut, everything from guidance counselors and social workers to after-school programs, and even in some cases, kindergarten has been reduced. So we've seen a lot of cuts, and what we really need is the type of approach that the State Assembly has proposed just this week, okay? In their One House budget bill, they proposed...
One House, for those who are listening, mean there's another budget bill in the Senate, which is different from the one in the Assembly, and the two have to come together.
Exactly. So in the Assembly's budget proposal, they propose a $2.1 billion school aid increase, and importantly, they put $1.1 billion of that into what's called foundation aid. That's the money that goes primarily to high-need school districts, and that's the kind of commitment we need from the state.
But the Assembly always argues high-need. The Senate, not so much.
No, the Senate. In fact, it depends on which day and which senators are arguing. But for instance, a couple weeks ago, we did a press conference where Senator Joe Griffo of Utica and Senator Sue Serena, who represents Poughkeepsie and other schools, were both there. And Senator George Amador, that covers Kingston to Amsterdam, was not there, but also, you know, supports the same positions, at least in rhetoric, okay, that they want to get more funding for the high-need schools. But now we look at their budget, and they don't really come through. So sometimes it's...
You mean you look at the Senate budget as opposed to the Assembly budget, they don't really come through, and they don't really come through because the Senate is less representative of the high-need schools than the Assembly.
Yes, that's correct. And the Senate is often more focused on the average and need and wealthy school districts. We say you have to help everybody, but you have to prioritize high needs. And the Senate budget just doesn't do that. And we'd like to see senators like Amador, Griffo, and Serino put their money where their mouth is. They say the right thing on a day where it's not that tough to do it. But when the going gets tough, when they're actually having to negotiate with their own colleagues among the Republicans in the Senate, they're nowhere to be seen.
Look, this is fairly turgid stuff. Obviously, the outsiders don't get involved in this on the level that maybe they ought to. Into this comes a third force, and that's the governor. Where is he in this?
Well, the governor is actually probably the weakest on funding the schools of any one of them. We will say he stopped some of his really horrific rhetoric attacking schools. He's no longer saying teacher bashing and saying that he used to say that schools were a public monopoly he was going to break up. He stopped saying those sort of outrageous remarks, but he's still not actually supporting adequate funding for our schools. And he's got a lot of excuses as to why. But the bottom line is that money is really important. Money pays for teachers, it pays for programs like arts and music in our schools. It pays for extra supports for students like guidance counselors and social workers. We can't do the job for our kids without the money.
Okay, Billy Easton, suppose that the governor doesn't put the money in, that the usual nonsense between the Assembly and the Senate, as we just talked about, continues, and that the school districts, particularly the high school districts, have to make do. That means that they have to go to the taxpayers, right?
Well, you know, they really can't do much to go to their local taxpayers either. For two reasons. The first one is that in the poorer communities, the local taxpayers just don't have the money anyways. So there's no way, you can't squeeze blood from a stone. But also there's a property tax cap in place.
Which was put in by the very same governor we're talking about.
By Andrew Cuomo. And it's the most restrictive property tax cap in the country.
Explain how it works, just so everybody will know.
They say it's a 2% cap on not your property tax rate, but on the local school district's tax levy, how much total money they can raise through their local property taxes. But it's really not. It fluctuates. So this year, it's basically a 0% cap, 0.3%. That is the average increase in levy that school districts will be able to propose. So if you want to go over that, you need a 60% vote of your
is
voters.
Is it 60% vote?
60. That's correct. And it's undemocratic. The problem is that it's just too restrictive. There should be some exceptions in there to cover some of the real rising costs. But it also, the bottom line is this: the state needs to step up to the plate and deliver the money from the state level, because local property taxpayers can't afford it in so many cases.
Well, Billy Easton, how do we respond to those critics of education in New York who say, look, we spend more money than anybody else and we get less for it?
Well, first off, we have one of the biggest inequalities of any state in the country. We spend $10,000 more per kid in wealthy districts than in poor districts. So just because they spend a ton of money in Scarsdale, it doesn't actually help kids in Utica or Albany. It makes the average go up for the state per kid, but it doesn't help the kids in poor communities. You have to actually make sure that the state is sending money to those poor communities.
Well, just in terms of playing out this hand, people don't like it when I play the devil's advocate, but let's assume that we took all the Scarsdales and the other places and rich districts and put them together and move them out of what the state spends. Are you maintaining, Billy Easton, that if you did that, that the poorer districts wouldn't still have more money than most places in the United States?
Well, first, I want to be clear. We're not saying the state should not invest at all in Scarsdale or any other district. We're not for taking money away, doing a Robin Hood approach of taking money from the...
Couldn't do it anyway, because it wouldn't happen.
But, you know, we don't live in Alabama or Mississippi. New York State is a much higher cost area. I'm glad that this is New York and not Alabama or Mississippi, frankly. You know, so the question is, yes, everything costs more here in New York. Everything costs more in New York. It's just the way it is. So, you know, you have to invest. If you're going to make it a priority, you have to invest in kids.
Then how come we're getting so little back, according to the critics? They're saying, yeah, but when you test out everybody in this state, even though we're putting a lot of money into education, we're not getting what we deserve.
Well, first off, I think there's a lot of questions about how valid those standardized tests are. But secondly, I think we are getting more results than those critics are acknowledging. A lot of those critics just want to destroy public education. But also, if we compare New York to New Jersey, where they have a system that is based on equity, where they actually spend more in poor districts than in wealthy districts, in New Jersey, they outperform us on all those same measures among poor kids, among African-American students, Latino students, English language learners, students with disabilities. They greatly outperform us. Why? Because they actually invest in those schools that I'm talking about. In New York, we don't invest, and we pay the consequence. So the truth is, if you're saying, let's measure by those standards, fine, let's measure by those standards. We're not investing in those schools the way New Jersey does, and we're not getting the results the way New Jersey does.
So what is the Alliance for Quality Education, which you head anyway?
It's a coalition of parent and community organizations around the state that is committed to educational equity and opportunity for every single student in the state, with a priority on the neediest communities in the state, including Black and Latino students, and needs need to be really prioritized.
So who gives you the money to run your organization?
We get funding from a variety of sources, mostly from foundations. We get funding from the teachers union as well, but our largest sources come from the combination of different foundations that fund us.
So how much is your budget every year for the Alliance for Quality Education?
Well, AQE's annual budget is about $500,000 a year, and then we partner with other organizations that have additional, you know, there's additional resources there. And
for example,
Citizen Action of New York is one of our main partners. New York Communities for Change, Make the Road New York, other organizations.
Okay, so you're here, you're arguing that, you know, basically, we're getting chipped in New York State, that the kids aren't getting what they need in order to have a quality of opportunity, right?
That's correct. And we're all going to pay the consequences for that. Those kids are going to be adults soon. And we need a well-educated populace to lead the state, to perform all the jobs from, you know, every level of jobs. And so we need education is essential to the quality of life of all of us.
So I guess I want to ask you this. We know that there's a well-known war going on between Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, and there are many of us who feel that it's Cuomo attacking de Blasio, that de Blasio, if he fights back, gets punished even more, that the voters in New York City have to take it on the chin, and that they're getting less as a result of this. However, I do know that the governor has a commitment to deliver for New York City and Rochester, for example. Is that adequate?
You know, when it comes to school funding, the governor's, not committed enough to either New York City, Rochester, or any other place in the state. I think there is definitely a political conflict that has come up between the governor and the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, and the governor seems to want to take it to the mayor anytime he can. The problem is when he takes it to the mayor on school funding, he actually takes it to kids in every part of the state, any high-need district, because we have a formula that was enacted in 2007 as a result of the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit that I was talking about before. That formula, called the Foundation Aid Formula, it prioritizes funding for high-need kids no matter what their zip code, whether they live in New York City, Rochester, Albany, Troy, Utica, Poughkeepsie. They're prioritized by that formula. But the governor doesn't use that formula, so yes.
Why doesn't he use it?
Why? Because he hasn't made a priority. He has not made a priority to invest in kids.
Isn't there a standard? This is a result of a lawsuit? I don't get it.
Well, that's why people are back in court now with what's called the small cities lawsuit, where parents from 8 small cities, most of which are in your, if not all, in your listenership area, are suing the state. Cities like Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, Port Jervis, Utica, where parents are suing the state.
Well, you haven't named one that isn't in our listening area.
Well, there's a couple other, Jamestown, Niagara Falls, Mount Vernon. You know, those three are also in there.
They'll hear this show, though.
There you go. I can't blame them. They would want to tune into your show every week. But, you know, I think they're suing because of the fact that the state has failed to fulfill its constitutional obligations as found under the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. They've gone back to court, and we're optimistic about the outcome of that case. A decision could be coming any week, or it could be a few months.
Billy Easton, when those decisions come down, does the governor have to listen to the courts?
Well, it's his obligation. It's his constitutional obligation.
Yeah, but that's iffy. I mean, you've sued before. You've won in the past. Does the governor keep his obligations according to what the judges told him to do?
Well, I think we will have to see, because the governor has not kept his obligations currently.
Well, that's the
governor,
issue.
The governor's disputing whether he has those obligations right now in court, which is funny because in 2011, in the small cities case, the governor's attorneys, the attorney general, argued on his behalf that, in fact, they didn't need the case to go forward. And the reason was because the foundation aid formula, which was enacted because of the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, was designed to meet the constitutional obligation, and its implementation would result in that. So it was very clear. They said that was the constitutional standard, and we're going to pay it, so throw the case out. The court let the case go forward, and now, 5 years later, when the case is in trial, the governor's arguing the exact opposite of what he argued then. Now he's saying that the foundation aid formula was never the constitutional standard, and they're not obliged to pay it. So we're used to that kind of double talk among politicians. We don't expect it when they are representing the state before our court system. We don't expect them to double talk there.
Okay, Billy Easton, we only have 10 minutes left, and it's going all too fast. So I'm going to ask you, give you keywords, and then I want you to respond. Okay?
Oh, the lightning round here.
Yeah, lightning round. Okay, here we go. How about the education tax credit?
Terrible idea.
Well, what is it?
It would take $150 million out of this year's state budget, and according to the state Senate majority, $300 million in a couple of years, that could go to public schools and instead give it to private schools. And
when you say private schools, what do you mean?
whether you're talking about, you know, wealthy elitist private schools on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, or you're talking about, you know, religious schools, Catholic or Jewish schools primarily, or other religious schools. Here's how it works. If you give $1.3 million to a private school, I haven't made any donations that size this year. I don't know about you or most of your listeners.
Well, I don't want to talk about it.
But if you make a $1.3 million donation to a private school, the taxpayers of the state will refund $1 million of it out of our tax base to you. So that's how it works. It's a boondoggle that helps private schools with public money and that subsidizes mostly a lot of wealthy donors, many of whom are hedge fund managers.
And those hedge fund managers or wealthy donors get to take this off the taxes, right?
Yes, it's not a tax deduction that reduces your taxable income. This is a tax credit. It's basically a direct refund to you in your tax bill.
Wow, that's really interesting. Okay, so let's talk about charter schools.
Charter schools. Okay. Well, the governor has proposed a number of increases for charter school funding, and the Senate has proposed even more of them. Meanwhile, we have a controversy going on because right now, Eva Moskowitz, who's the head of the Success Academy, the most prominent charter school network in the whole country, her schools have been exposed to have all kinds of abusive practices towards students, whether they are there was a terrible video that was circulated across the country.
I saw it.
Yeah, where the teacher was absolutely abusive to the student. The student didn't know the answer to a math question. And the teacher just went into an abusive rant on them, and they rip up the paper. That's not an unusual practice in these schools.
But in terms of funding, do charter schools cost regular public schools? Because charter schools say that they're public mm-hmm. schools. Do they cost regular public schools money?
Yes, because it takes money in two different ways. One is it takes money out of the local budget to pay what they call a charter school tuition. The other is that the state now wants to increase funding while they're not funding our poor schools enough. They want to increase state funding for those schools as well.
Well, so the next question is pre-K.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, but the fact is the governor made some promises on pre-K, right?
That's correct. The governor promised, this is all gets back to your de Blasio Cuomo
fight.
Fight, because the governor, when he was trying to stop de Blasio from getting pre-K in New York City, he promised pre-K for every kid in the state. He said, we can't do it for New York City alone. We have to do it for every kid in the state. Well, we ended up doing it for New York City, but he forgot about the rest of the kids in the state, you know? And so the Board of Regents called for $125 million this year for pre-K. We called for the same amount, and the governor proposed $22 million. But he proposed it only for three-year-olds. He hasn't delivered for four-year-olds yet. We have over 100,000 four-year-olds out there who are waiting for the governor to come through on his promise. And they're going to be 10 or 20 by the time it comes through at the rate we're going.
What's the carried interest loophole?
Ah, now this is a very interesting subject. It sounds pretty dry, but in fact, it's actually very interesting. This is one where hedge fund managers get off with an unbelievable boondoggle because they are paying a lower tax rate on their income than you or I, on their federal income. Because the way it works is this. If you make an investment in stock and you make money on that, it's called a capital gain. You pay a lower interest rate on that, okay? But the hedge fund managers aren't investing their money. They're managing other people's money.
Correct.
And they're getting that lower rate, that lower capital gains tax rate, instead of the income tax rate. So we want to close that. We're not alone in wanting to close that. This is one thing where Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders all agree. We should close that loophole.
So why don't we do it?
Well, in fact, we have a bill that was proposed this last week by Assemblyman Jeff Aubrey and Assemblyman Sean Ryan. Jeff Aubrey from Queens, Sean Ryan from Buffalo.
I don't hear a senator's name there.
Well, that's correct. Right now we're starting in the assembly. And, you know, this would have the state close the loophole because the feds have failed to do it. So the state would close the loophole and it would generate over.
So that part of the state tax as opposed to the federal tax.
Well,
right?
we would recapture what they aren't paying the feds. Basically, if they would pay the feds, if the feds charge it, then this would go away. But we would have them recapture what they don't pay the feds.
But you know this isn't going to happen, Billy Easton.
Well,
I mean, you got two obscure assemblymen doing your bill for you. But in fact, there's nothing in the Senate. And while it sounds horrendous, I dare say it's not going to happen.
Well, you know, a couple years ago, people said that the idea of a $15 minimum wage was absolutely impossible. And a few years before that, the idea of gay marriage was absolutely impossible.
So,
you know, if you have big ideas, You have to start somewhere, and you have to put those ideas out there boldly, and that's what we've done with our other allies. This is both community groups and unions that are backing this, and we are going to push forward on this because it's really unbelievable. These hedge fund managers are getting away with a boondoggle deal. It's a sweetheart where they pay less taxes than their secretaries, or in fact than people who run radio stations.
Yeah, that's wrong.
That is wrong.
Okay, so let's take a little test here. I'm a big guy to suggest that equality of opportunity is where we should be going. In other words, if you give a kid a substandard education, right, there's little chance that they'll be competitive with somebody who once goes through the Horace Mann School in one of the upper prep schools in New York or Riverdale or Fieldston or whatever. So my question to you is, do you agree with that, that equality of opportunity suffers? If you think about the words, equality of opportunity for every kid suffers when some are treated better than others.
Absolutely.
Okay, so stop right there. So then my question is, what about the City University of New York? Now, this does not fall within Billy Easton's general purview of protecting the education, or I don't want to say lower education, because it's not lower, but as opposed to higher education. Are you guys making common cause with the city, which is obviously getting screwed on how much money is being given by the governor to CUNY, and a lot of people attribute this to his fight with de Blasio?
Yeah, in fact, we have AQE, the Alliance for Quality Education. We have joined in a coalition in New York City with a lot of community groups, student groups, and the professors union, the Professional Staff Congress at CUNY, to demand that all of that money be restored. And in fact, going beyond that, to say that, we need to stop tuition hikes in so that the access to CUNY remains affordable.
Well, look, Billy Easton, you obviously encourage the governor's ire. There are others who get phone calls from time to time who fall into the same group as you do. Do they call you up, or do you not even matter to them?
We used to have more conversations with the governor's office than we do now. And I think that...
What, did they figure you just don't matter?
I don't know if they think that as much as that, our differences, outreached our common ground. And, we have been unwilling, unintimidated by the governor's posturing.
Do you think he's a bully?
Well, he certainly has earned that reputation. I think the fact that he's got
Has he earned it from you?
Well, he hasn't actually successfully bullied me, so I would say no. But I think that, that they definitely respond publicly to things that we do and say. So I wouldn't say that they don't think we matter. We would like to see there be more room for common ground with the governor. We're optimistic about the fact that he's changed his rhetoric and tone. Now we'd like to see him actually take on educational equity and make it a real priority for our state.
The Board of Regents has come under attack. We only have a minute, but tell me really quickly, Billy Easton, there are those who are calling for the disbandment of the Board of New York State Board of Regents. Are you for that or against it?
That's a terrible idea.
Because
the Board of Regents, education should be a little independent and above the political fray. And the Board
of
Regents...
That's why it's got a separate Board of Regents.
That's exactly right. And the Board of Regents allows for that. I think that what you see is a lot of desire for a change in direction in the Board of Regents. And I think based on the new makeup of the Regents and what the likely change and who's going to be chancellor, that you're going to see a change in direction.
And frankly, that looks like... There are those people who are arguing for more equality in terms of protecting those who are most disenfranchised. Is that right?
Yeah, the Board of Regents are among those who actually do strongly raise their voice in that way, and that's important, very important.
We've had a wonderful conversation today. I wish we could go on, but we cannot, with Billy Easton, Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education. Billy, thank you so much for joining us. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
They can look at our website, aqeny.org, or they can call our office, 518-432-5315.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.